Stanford Steve and the Bear is presented by Allstate. Save money like a champion with Allstate's new lower auto rates. Visit allstate.com or call an agent for a quote today. Championship savings for the win.
The underdog is howling.
Stanford Steve and the Bear.
Ah, yes. A home team getting points. What's better than that?
Welcome in. Championship week. A week before bowls are set. All the good stuff. We got 11 games. 10 titles on the line. And I got some math for Bear to check me on.
Great. Perfect. All right. But, just what I needed this time of the morning. Math. I was told there would be no math.
Oh, sorry. Before we get started, two things I just wanted to mention. New SV Pod this week on the podcast. Scott and I discussed whether his tree was up, tree purchased, best and worst Christmas songs, how early to start Christmas songs, all that good stuff. Thanksgiving recap, reaction to Lincoln Riley taking the SC job. It was before Brian Kelly went to LSU, which Bear and I will talk about in a little bit. But all that good stuff, listen and follow to SV Pod wherever you get your podcast. And watch NBA Today, Monday through Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern, noon Pacific on ESPN and the ESPN app, or listen to the show wherever you listen to your podcasts. Scott and I also just taped the bad beats of the month, and boy, they were bad. That should be up on the ESPN app. You could watch that anywhere you find that. That goes up on the first of every month for a month prior recap, which we've been having some fun with. So, Bear, here's what I got here, all right? I don't think this is too crazy for you. I said 11 games, 10 titles on the line, okay? I see.
Yeah, there's no title on the line in Berkeley this weekend?
There is not, but I do want to touch on that game because I know I'm going to be watching it because it's at 11 Eastern and it's on the one for fun. So I will be taking that one in. But before the year started, I was worried that the sport was starting to feel a little broken because we didn't have any new flavor in there. And all I asked was for an opportunity to see some new flavor and those teams that had the chance, pounce on the opportunity and get there. So with that, 10 titles on the line this week, 7 conferences are going to have new champions. 7. That's what I have. 2 conferences will have possible new champions that are favored, and one repeat team is favored, and that's Cincinnati. The two possible new champs that are favored are Utah and Georgia. So I'm really fired.
What about Michigan? Michigan would be a new champ who's favored.
Yeah, but they're already that game already is guaranteeing a new champ.
Okay,
I put that one in. So that's in the 7. I'm the worst at math, but I tried to make it so I can explain it. And then I put 10 at the top, and then I had to add the 7-2 and the 1 underneath it. So we got there. 10 for 10. I'll tell you this. We could talk all the coaching stuff at the back end and have some fun with that, because I'll just say this. I love every hire so far. Love every hire. But when I look at this slate and I'm going down, and that's what stuck out to me, because I was like, all right, how many teams do we have? And then, you know, I said, you know, the Sun Belt, I put in that we'll definitely have a new champion because that game got called, Coastal and Louisiana, which was I was really looking forward to last year. Yep. That didn't happen. But I'm looking down this slate and I'm leaning every underdog. I really am. And it's all different scenarios. I look at our Roadrunners who are at home now and they already beat Western Kentucky. And I know they lost last week, but they weren't in the running for a New Year's Six, you know. They played their worst game of the year. I liked the over in that game last week. I thought they were going to be sluggish and North Texas needed a bowl and they got the win. Oregon.
It's a good time to get your worst game of the year out of the way right before the biggest game of the year.
Right. And I would expect an awesome crowd in the Alamo Dome Friday night. I'm actually fired up. That's the first game we get Friday because that over-under is 72.5. I believe the Roadrunners won 52-46 earlier this year, and Western Kentucky hasn't lost since that game. We know what Bailey Zappi has done. I'm bummed I didn't take a shot at them to win the conference, seeing what those odds are now, what they were preseason. Right. If you don't know the story, Bailey Zappe was a quarterback at Houston Baptist. The head coach of the Hilltoppers, Tyson
Helton.
Yeah. Why did I write Helton?
I don't know.
I can't read my own writing. That's how early it is.
Maybe you're thinking of Tyson Berry, NHL player. I don't know.
Oh, maybe. No, but Tyson Helton goes out and gets Zach Kittley, who is the at Houston Baptist, and called the plays for Zappe and just brought that whole offense in. If you remember way back to last year, Houston Baptist got on the map because they went to Lubbock and almost won and beating Texas Tech. But they've done nuts. They went nuts. Zappe, almost 5,000 yards, 52 touchdowns. I mentioned they won 7 in a row. They do have the loss earlier to the Roadrunners in a game. In that game, Zappe threw for 505 TDs, and Frank Wilson threw for 349 and 6 touchdowns. So this is the first on the docket, and I'm fired up for it. I do lean the Roadrunners getting the points at home.
Yeah, I'm a little bummed. I'm not going to be able to pay full attention to this game because I'll be in Vegas for the Pac-12 title game. Looking to see if Oregon can regain some of the manhood that the that the Utes stole from them in Salt Lake a couple of weeks back with just an awful performance defensively, poor tackling, just got completely dominated up front on both sides of the ball. Anthony Brown had his worst game of the year. So I'm really curious. I would expect Oregon to come out and play a very inspired game with a chance at the Rose Bowl. Both, I mean, that's the great thing. Like in our conversations with players this week, like they couldn't care less about the playoff. They like no. Utah's like, we can go to the Rose Bowl. And it's awesome to hear that that still matters to these players that the Rose Bowl, I mean, you played in it, you know what it's all about. Anyone who's grown up a college football fan knows that, that the Rose Bowl is kind of above all those other bowl games. And it's great to see that these players in this age of seemingly playoff or bust in a lot of situations, that that this game ultimately matters a hell of a lot to these guys. I don't have a play on this one because I don't have a feel. I would lean UTSA with you in that first game, but I'm just going to sit back and enjoy and sit in the truck and enjoy this game in Vegas on Friday night.
You mentioned Vegas. I should have started right there. Travel itinerary for the Bears starts, I would guess, Thursday. Well, we're coming
to your city. Yeah, Thursday morning to Vegas. Get there around lunchtime. I got to figure out a couple of maybe cross-board parlays to maybe throw in there and play and visit the boys down at Circa. Dinner, I believe, for a Thursday night with Gil and Chris Andrews from South Point.
What do we got? Joseph's?
I don't know. I don't know where we're going to go yet. We haven't ultimately decided. I'll have to
go there,
figure that out.
Go there.
Okay.
Yes.
I'll leave. Chris usually has a pretty good, if it's up to Gil, we're going to go to Carbo, which is fine. Like I got no problem with that, but Chris usually is pretty good at finding so some like off the strip type of place. Like,
why did I say Joseph's? It's Michael's in the South Point Steakhouse. Sorry. Can't believe I got that wrong.
I was going to say, but I thought maybe Joseph was something new because the new places are popping up all the time.
Yeah.
Then Friday morning, we'll have my production call at some point, but I'm going to head down to South Point, cast some conference win total futures from the preseason, which did pretty well. I got two pushes. That was one of the things. I had two like worst case scenario pushes. I volunteered the push with Kansas against Texas. I gladly accepted that. And then I pushed with Ohio State on the Michigan game, but I actually was able to, I played Michigan on money line last week to kind of guarantee a little profit off of that. So that worked out well. So I got the show at South Point with Gil on Friday. Game, then fly right from amazingly there's a nonstop flight from Vegas to Atlanta immediately following the Pac-12 championship game.
Oh, amazingly.
Yeah, I was gonna say somehow they this one scheduled. So we'll probably get to Atlanta around 4 a.m. or so. Hopefully I can bed head can hit the pillow around 4:45. get maybe two and a half hours of sleep, and then go right to the game day set for a 9 o'clock game day show. Post show nap, back into the Mercedes-Benz Georgia Dome, Superdome. Pardon me, I don't know the name. I just call it the Georgia Dome because I remember stadium names like
Mercedes-Benz. I believe it is.
It's Mercedes-Benz. I don't.
Yeah.
Don't. Whatever.
We got it.
You got it. And then I'm so fired up to watch this game, man. So I get to stay, watch the game, and we're going to hang out, watch the Big Ten championship game. And after Big Ten championship game, again, there's a miraculously scheduled flight. That's waiting for Kirk and Reese and myself to fly back up here from Atlanta in order to get ready for selection day. So I'll be home in the wee hours on Sunday morning.
Okay. You are not a coffee drinker, correct?
No. Nope.
Did you know?
Wow. Okay.
No. I'm glad you said that too, because I already packed my little vitamin kit. I'm gonna need to boy. What I do drink is the Advocare Spark.
Okay.
It's like a caffeine-free type, energy, sugar-free energy, and that gives me the boost that I need.
Okay.
So Advocare Spark is my jolt of energy, which is what I'm absolutely going to need around 8:30 in the morning on Saturday. That's for sure.
Are we going to be indoors? Cause I'm wondering
if
Desmond and those guys, Pollock look cold. I'm wondering if they thawed out at all.
It was so cold. Like my quads were frozen when I got up from the set to walk over to the demo field to do the college football playoff discussion.
Yep.
And then like at first it was like, oh yeah, cool. This is just like a little bit of little snow, a few flurries.
Oh yeah.
And then it was like legit snow. And then we left at halftime to head on out to Stillwater. But yeah, actually we are going to be indoors this week, I was told. Okay. I guess there's a big fan fest area somewhere in like, I don't know.
The convention center.
I was going to say in the Georgia Convention Center or that Congress Center.
It's right there.
And I was told our set was going to be inside there. So yeah, a little
there we spot. Go.
We do not have to worry about the bear and his hand warmers this week.
All right. No ear warmers either. All right. No. We have the travel set fired up. You guys will be all over the place this weekend. And that's great. You guys are calling that game out in Vegas Friday. To me, going back to the underdogs thing and why I lean, like Utah should be given more. We just watched this. They dominated them every.
Does it worry you that they're not?
Yes. Because I mean, what my two tickets I have left in place for conferences, I have UTSA from the beginning of the year to win that, and then I have Utah at 8.5 to 1. So. Those are, Utah is one of the few that are favored this week. I was impressed with Oregon last week, getting up off the deck and playing that Civil War and getting the win in the fashion that they did. And to me, it's about Utah. Here's what I'm worried. The thing that worries me about Oregon, Utah just doesn't give the ball up. I mean, they make you earn everything you get. I just did it out. Oregon, the two losses, they don't have any takeaways. And Utah, I don't think, has turned it over in six games. Is that right? And it just sticks in your head how Utah ran for over 200 against them. What is that, 2 weeks ago? So that's what does worry me with Oregon. It just, I lean Oregon because, the line doesn't make sense. And I think... it just goes back to what I say always about the Pac-12 too, is we get to these circumstances and the favorite pees down their leg and they don't play well. And it does feel like Utah has been playing a little bit over their head. We talked earlier in the year how we were like, can we stop with the Utah talk? Cause they look that bad. And then they make the quarterback change, and Oregon, it just feels like an Oregon season. Weird loss in November, somehow scrap it all, but put it together and play for the Rose Bowl berth, that Friday night before championship Saturday.
Yeah, you mentioned about the Pac-12 and like if you go back over the last 4 years in the 20 Power 5 conference title games, there have only been two upsets, and they both come in the Pac-12. If you eliminate the four Pac-12 championship games, which had two upsets, like the ACC, the SEC, the Big 10, and the Big 12, there hasn't been a single upset. So what you said maybe kind of in jest and people laugh. Oh yeah, there he is, just kind of making fun of the doctor. And it's true. It's legit. And it is one of those storylines this week about you saying you like all these underdogs, and the conference title games lately have not been upset oriented. Like, we had that run back in the BCS era where BCS 1, 2, and 3, it seemed like every year someone is losing. Like if you just take the playoff era since 2014, the 24 Power Five conference favorites of greater than 4 points are 23-1 straight up. The Utah loss to Oregon, where they totally peed down their leg, was a couple losses. And you got Georgia, Michigan, Oklahoma State, got two teams looking to make their first playoff appearance, all greater than 4 point favorite. Mm-hmm. Like pressure, maybe. If you include the AAC, there are three more teams. Like the number was 27-1 since 2014, favorites outright.
Wow.
Of more than 4 points. You got Cincinnati as a double digit favorite, looking to be the first group of five team to make the playoffs. So, like, there haven't been upsets yet, but maybe with these newcomers to the college football playoff, maybe a little bit of pressure this week. Who knows?
27-1.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Power five and AAC favorites of greater than 4 points in the playoff era, 27-1 in conference title games.
So that's since 2014 or 15?
2014.
Got it. Got to write that one down for my future radio hits this week.
I'm happy to help.
More than 4 points.
Greater than 4 points.
Did you know?
All right. Wow.
It'll be in your Bear Bites later today as well.
Can't wait for those nuggets. Yeah, that makes me feel horrible. I don't care.
It doesn't matter.
Like you firing like you did last week.
I know. And you know what I'm mad about last week? I kind of like the Florida State game and BYU looked too obvious. And I was like, I don't care.
Yeah.
And, well, I don't know. Whatever. It's fine.
It's there. It's the most. It's almost the most wonderful time of the year. We're right there.
I'm just waiting. I'm just waiting to be asked to do FaceTime hits from Turks and Caicos in a couple of weeks. Can you preview the Arnold Carriers New Orleans Bowl for me? Sure. I'm going to be in a t-shirt and a bathing suit. And you're going to see Grace Bay behind me.
There we go. All right. So those are Friday night. I just want to get times for everybody because I can't wait to watch all these.
Pac-12 game is 8 Eastern. I know that.
8 Eastern, ABC, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Western Kentucky, UTSA.
7 Eastern.
7 Eastern, CBS Sports Network. And then let's go to Saturday. Game day, you'll be traveling across the country. Mm-hmm. And 12 p.m. Eastern, ABC. It's the Big 12 game at AT&T mm-hmm. Stadium in Arlington. No worries about weather there. Number 9, Baylor. And number 5, Oklahoma State. Oklahoma State -5.5, over under 46.5. 9 of the 12 Baylor's games this year went over 46.5. The Pokes are 9-3 against the spread, and 4-1 when favored by 5.5 or more. What it comes down to me is Oklahoma State and taking care of the football. They have 15 giveaways this year. Baylor loves taking it away with 20. That's the reason I love Baylor in this matchup. I talked about it. Grimes is my favorite offseason hire. As far as the coordinators, that's come around. I really think Baylor's established an identity, and I just wonder how Oklahoma State comes back after last week. I mean, the idea and the vision of seeing Gundy get doused and throw on the cowboy hat and get the fish handshake from Lincoln Riley.
We
see him all. I mean, guy Vrabel even gave one to Belichick last Sunday, which was great because he knows that's what Bill does. But I lean Baylor. Like, I like that identity, and I just think of the pressure that's on Oklahoma State, knowing, like, they're the first ones out. Noon Eastern, like, all eyes are on them. What do you show for it? They don't have any star-studded All-America first-round draft picks on their team. They're a team that's bought into their system from their coach and gotten the job done week in and week out, and that's a tribute to them. I think they win the game, but I think it's a field goal game, and that's why I lean Baylor plus 5.5.
You mentioned the turnovers, and they got a couple of Spencer Sanders turnovers in that first mm-hmm. meeting, but on the two ensuing drives, they had negative yardage and couldn't capitalize on them. If this is a hard play for me right now, not knowing the status of Bohannon. Like, mm-hmm. if he doesn't play, then you're playing a backup who now Oklahoma State has film on. And that kind of was the situation a couple of weeks ago when they played TCU. Mm-hmm. TCU, the week after the win over Baylor, they got the tape on Morris, and then they completely died. Like, I see both sides of it. I think by the time I get to Saturday, especially if this number comes down more, I might be on Oklahoma State because you're right. My first instinct on Sunday morning when I did the Daily Wager phoner was at 6 or 6.5, wherever this was at the open. I was like, at this number, I'm going to have to take Baylor just because of the reasons that you talked about, like Oklahoma State, the party atmosphere. Mm-hmm. Can they beat him again? I only saw the number going down.
Yeah.
So, but if it comes down, 4.5 in that realm, and there's still a question about whether Bohannon is going to play, then Oklahoma State might be the play. But right now, I sitting here on Wednesday morning, this is a wait and see for me. But again, I wouldn't argue if A, you took the side of pressure, can they get back up, B, Bohannon's not going to be able to play, Oklahoma State at a reduced number, I'm going to play. So.
And that's what it comes down to me. I just look at the idea of where they are, and I love what Gundy's done in overcoming all that adversity against Oklahoma and getting it done, and now getting his team here to play. I did, you know, I mentioned Aranda's defense. I probably should have mentioned Oklahoma State's defensive coordinator, right?
Jimmy Knowles.
Unreal job this year. Unreal job for the Cowboys and the Pokes. So that gets us started. Now we start getting into it as I believe this is same time. Our Mac Insiders team.
Yeah. We win one for win horse is also.
Oh, yeah. 12 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, Ford Field, which I think is key here. All right. It's inside at Detroit. I know it's always there, but when I think of watching Maction for that,
that's a massive help for Kent State, isn't it?
Yes. And I ask again, Rocky didn't play last week. Northern Illinois gets the job done. Or no, they ended up losing. No, that was the fishy line. They were first in the division and underdog to the last place team, and the last place team won and covered, but Northern Illinois didn't have anything to play for. They had already taken care of business. That over under is looking at you. It's Kent State -3, over under 74.5 inside on the turf. Kent State averaging over 33 points per game. They're 10th in the country in most plays per game. And I think I can't say I trust. I just like the idea of Kent State here with knowing what I've seen from Northern Illinois. I think they've been one of the more fortunate teams in the country. Their average wins are about 3.7 points. That's mm-hmm. what I've written down.
Yeah.
They give up 7 yards per play, and they only have 14 sacks. And I look at Kent State as a team.
14. Think about what you just said.
Yeah,
in the MAC, a team that all they do is off at 14, the number of dropbacks that they must have
faced
this year, and they have 14 sacks.
Yes,
now they got to go against Kent State.
But I will say, in Northern Illinois, I think I read they only gave up 10 sacks. So it's
line play,
a lot of line play in DeKalb. Are you ordering food?
No, it's one of those telemarketer calls, a random deal. I tried to turn the volume down, but it
just wait it out.
Yeah. No, we're good. We're good. Usually my wife is pretty quick to the trigger on that. At least my email's off.
There we go.
I got that going today, so people are happy. People are happy.
Yeah. So with the idea of me liking all the underdogs, this is the one I have the toughest Because I feel like Kent State's on an upswing. We go back to the beginning of the year. They had the brutal bad beat against Texas A&M to start the year. They go on the road, lose to Maryland. Like they played, they went to Iowa, lost that game. Like they tested themselves early in the year and got themselves better for MAC play. And here they are playing for a conference title. So I think I would lean over, though, knowing that it's going to be on the turf inside.
Yeah, I probably would too, and I would probably lean Kent State as well. I mean, you look at the earlier meeting and not 52 on the board, and what was it, like 10 yards a play or something like that? It felt like that they gained. I mean, it was 11 yards a pass. What was it, 682 yards on 75 plays. So, yeah, like nine yards a play. Like Northern Illinois moved the ball up and down the field too, but yeah, it just doesn't feel like the type of game that is going to see very many stops.
Nope. But it'll be awesome to watch. So I'm fired up for that one. 3 p.m. Eastern on Fox. Utah State is at San Diego State in that game that I believe they played all their home games there at that Dignity Health Sports Park in Carson, California.
Yep.
Shout out to San Diego State. I was really curious to see how they ended the year, knowing that the schedule I felt was backloaded for them, had Fresno State against them, and that was ended up being their only loss. Utah State comes in with 3 losses to Wyoming, BYU, and Boise. San Diego State coming off that comeback win. That was really impressive against Boise last, what was that, Friday or Saturday morning at 9 a.m. out there.
Yeah, 9 a.m. local. Slow start and then poured it on.
And I would say, I think I saw, I could be wrong here, and I should have asked you before this. I think Utah State is the biggest dog in playing in a conference championship game. Is that possible? I thought I saw like a 50-1 on that before the year.
The biggest from preseason?
Yeah.
Yeah, they'd have to be. I shouldn't say what was
maybe Northern Wake Forest or Pitt, too, because of the Clemson.
Wake Forest because of Clemson. Northern Illinois was probably, but I'm sure they were up there. I would think Wake Forest had to have been, though.
Yeah.
I don't have any preseason sheets handy. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sure everybody will yell at us for that one. Mm-hmm. But anyway, it feels too good to be true. I love what I've seen from San Diego State, but I like what Utah State has done. I would lean taking the 6 here in this game.
I would too. And again, this number, it feels like I just heard one way action on this game. With San Diego State, but I like what Bonner has done through the others here, coming in with Blake from Arkansas State. Kind of, I think San Diego State is going to have a hard time really slowing them down, and if Utah State scores say 24 points, is San Diego State going to score 31? Like this is not a San Diego State offense.
No, it's
going to put up a ton of points. So, like, if you tell me right now, I like you look back at the 27, 28, 23, 17, 20, 20, 19, 31 against New Mexico. Like, that's like their Mountain West offensive output. It's 20 to 28 is their highest total. Like if you're telling me San Diego State is going to score 28 points, I'll take my chances that Utah State was able to score 24.
Yeah, it sets up for a really good matchup. Jesse Matthews is a guy I've watched the last couple of weeks for San Diego State that's been incredible. 9 catches in each of those games against Boise and UNLV, 4 touchdowns. He's been a big difference maker and saved them offensively a ton. As you mentioned, they have not been good consistently. So that's a cool matchup out there in Carson, California. So that gets us to an underdog that I really don't understand, and it's starting to scare me because it hasn't moved and it feels like there's something going on, but it's Louisiana +3 at home against App State, and the over under is 53. And I know everybody's going to point to Billy Napier coaching this game, but if there's one team that I would expect an A-plus effort, knowing that this could be the last game they have their head coach and what he's done for that program, it's Louisiana. Yep. They dominated App State when they played early on this year in one of those weeknight games. They took it away from App State. Bryce was not good. Louisiana won 41-13. I know App State's won six in a row. I think they've lost since that game, and that included that first loss to Coastal. But when I see that game, I know it's at stake and what the kids from Louisiana are playing for. And now they're an underdog at home. Like, I can't. I feel like I'm on the wrong side of it, Bob, because they're telling you what to do with App State favor. But I'm taking Louisiana in this game.
Well, if we're going to be on the wrong side of it together, we're going to win together, or we're going to
won't lose be the first time this year, Bear.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. I'm with you. I like Louisiana in this game, an opportunity to win a conference championship after that game got canceled last year, and then they lost that close game to App State a couple of years ago. I'm with you. I think this is usually a lot of people will be hesitant on Hank taking the coach hanging around, but I think this is going to be all in for 1 week for Billy Napier. Kind of like when UCF the year that Scott Frost hung around and coached them, I could see a very similar type deal this week for Louisiana. I think offensively they're going to have a little bit too much. And yeah, you're always a little hesitant being that you beat a team 41-13 first time around and you completely dominated the game. And of course there's going to be revenge at stake. Is Appalachian State going to turn the ball over four times again? No, but at the same time, Louisiana, I'm just so used to saying UL Lafayette.
Yep.
I mean, it's a team that ran for 60 yards a carry, overcame some penalty troubles of their own in that game. Lewis was really efficient. I think even if Appalachian State doesn't turn the ball, if they only turn over once or twice, I still think Louisiana is the better team here. And at home, I will take the short home dog.
Very good. And that gets us to the two matchups at 4 Eastern. Let's start with the game on ABC 4 Eastern at historic Nippert Stadium, number 21, Houston, which I still feel like is underranked, at number 4, Cincinnati. And we know what's at stake for Cincinnati. Cincinnati comes in as a 10.5-point favorite, over under 53. And that's where I feel like, I mean, I looked at the first thing I did was look at the weather, Bear. It looks like it's going to be 50 degrees and no precipitation, no rain. And I feel like that lines up for good for both teams. And I understand the personnel Cincinnati has on defense. I think their corners are great. But if Houston's going to do one thing in this game, I feel like they're going to score a little bit. And I could see them scoring 20. Mm-hmm. And I think Cincinnati scores 30 plus. So I lean towards the over in this game. If I had to pick the game, I would take the 10.5 again with the idea of what I mentioned with Oklahoma State. I see Cincinnati winning the game, but I think 10.5 is a lot with Tune in that Cougars offense. So I like the over here, and I would lean taking the points with Houston, but I think Cincinnati wins the game.
Yeah, we'll see. In the two meetings that you had between Dana and Luke, Houston and Cincinnati, Luke's defense has shut them down pretty good both times and really handled them. So I kind of think this game could get out of hand. I really do. Mm-hmm. I think Cincinnati finally getting here. And I know I talked about pressure. I don't know. I think Cincinnati got their little nervous stretch out of the way when the rankings first came out. Yeah. And the last couple of weeks, they've certainly played much better. The big special teams play last week, the block field goal, kind of put that game out of reach against East Carolina. I don't know. I think Cincinnati comes out here, plays great, and finishes the regular season. They're undefeated with a pretty convincing win over Houston. Okay. And do you think it's as simple as winning in for Cincy?
Not if Bama and Oklahoma
Bama State wins. Bama wins. Oklahoma State wins.
I think it's tough.
And Michigan wins.
I think it's tough. Really tough. I want them to get in. They deserve to be in. And that's, I hope they do get in if that's the scenario, because they deserve it. Because when you look at Oklahoma State's resume, what do they got? A win?
They have a win over Oklahoma, two wins over Baylor, and a controversial loss.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think they'd put Cincy in.
Yeah.
That would be my hunch right now.
I don't want to see that come down to that. I don't. But yeah, I'm an undefeated guy. I think the undefeated matters most, and knowing what they did.
Regardless, all one loss records are created equal. Doesn't matter strength of schedule or anything like that.
I think undefeated should come into play there.
13-0 group of five is better than 12-1.
Yes.
Power five. Okay.
Yes. Yep. All right. The game you will be watching in the Mercedes-Benz Dome, Atlanta, 4:00 CBS, Georgia, Alabama. We've been waiting for it. It's been circled all year. I will just say this. I know all the stats are going to be out there. The last time Nick Saban was an underdog, I believe it's 2015 at Georgia, where they were technically a 1-point dog and they rolled them. I believe that was a scenario too, pregame. There's a little scuffle on the sidelines. I think Georgia wins the game. I will take the points. If I'm going to buy it to 7. I just like the capability of Alabama's offense against that Georgia defense. And listen, Georgia's going to win the majority of the time, but I think they have the goods to keep it close. I think they're going to put pressure on Georgia's corners that they haven't even come close to seeing all year. And they'll set that stuff up by starting it off with some quick game. They'll have Jamison back after, the first half targeting call. Now, if that was a second half targeting call, this would be a different story for me, I think. But I just think the capability of Alabama's offense. I know they've struggled to run the football consistently, but I do think Bryce Young is that good. And I think Bama's defense will bring something to the table and show up and keep Georgia at bay. So I don't feel great about it. But we're going to be asked to pick this game all week because it's the biggest game. I don't feel great, but I would buy it to 7 and I would take Alabama.
I'd have to take Alabama plus the points with you as well. Just because I think it's an overreaction to last week's game.
Yep.
And you know that it's still Alabama, and the talent that they still have there is insane. So because they survived a game that, they should have lost, and Brian Harsin and Tank Bigsby kind of botched the end of the game. Mm-hmm. But Alabama still had to make the play there to get the game to overtime. Mm-hmm. And they did. So I would lean towards taking the points here. I do think under is probably a way to go here as well.
Okay.
If you look at Georgia since 2018, the 16 games they've played against ranked opponents, 13 of them have gone under the total. So when Kirby is very comfortable playing tight defense, relying on his defense in these types of games and really not going crazy. So I think underdog and under would be the way that I looked at it. And you hit on it too, the fact that Jameson's back. Like, the start of this game is so big. Mm-hmm. Because in 10 of the 12 games this year, Georgia's led by at least 14 points at halftime.
Did you know?
There you go.
In each of the last five. So the start is so important, but it just feels like you're getting more points than you really should, just because of the narrative and the way Alabama did come back and win that game last week.
I'm dying to see and hear from all the people that have taken Alabama first half the last 2 years to see how they feel about Alabama first half in this game. That is what I'm waiting to hear, because I don't feel like I'll hear too many people saying Alabama first half this week. But I can't wait for it. It's all that is cracked up to be. It's 4:00. It's right there in the middle of the day, and I cannot wait for it.
I can't either.
8:00. Eastern, Lucas Oil Stadium, my favorite NFL stadium in the country. It's number two, Michigan. It's number 13, Iowa.
It's funny. I just did being that you said that, going back to what you were talking about earlier about how you feel on the sport was getting close to broken and needing some new teams. Like last week was about as perfect of a situation as you could have gotten. You had Ohio State dethroned and out. You had Clemson dethroned and out. You had Oklahoma dethroned and out. And you were a botched end of game situation from having Alabama dethroned and out. So like, if you're just like the neutral college football fan and wanting, like, it was about as good of a situation that you could have had. And just seeing Michigan, just talking Michigan was what made me think of that right now. So sorry.
Yeah, and it goes back to what we touched on with Oklahoma State here, Bear. I think it's going to take a bit for Michigan to get going. And if they don't, like, credit to them, they'll be ready to go. I just think Iowa can hang around against them. I don't think Michigan's going to be able to run the ball when everybody in the stadium knows that Michigan wants to run the ball in Iowa like they did on Ohio State. I sort of feel like it plays in their hands a little bit. I do expect Michigan to take some shots to try and open it up, knowing how Iowa likes to play. But we've seen that Iowa defense diced up. It's not what it's been. I'll say that. I just think like 10 and a half, 10. I mean, this is another, I feel like it's another mountain for Harbaugh to climb. He hasn't been good against Iowa. They were all winnable games, and knowing what's at stake here, I feel like it's a touchdown, you know, maybe even a field goal game. So I like Iowa plus the 10 and a half here.
I think Iowa team totals under is probably the way to go here. Like seriously, how many points is Iowa realistically going to expect to score here?
Mm-hmm.
Like if they score two touchdowns, that's a lot, I think.
Yeah.
Which leads me to another, like I know there have been a lot of great jobs this year by assistant coaches, but how is Mike McDonald not a Broyles finalist? The reason Michigan is here is because of their defense and the unbelievable improvement that they made from previous years. Like the fact that he wasn't a Broyles finalist is like amazing to me.
I'm absolutely fascinated by this. Do you think 23 points wins this game, right?
Oh, totally.
20?
Yeah, because I guess I'm not expecting Iowa to be the team to be able to get that high. Like probably 17 is probably like the ceiling, I would think, for Iowa. I like Michigan in this game, man.
Yeah.
I know. Everyone's kind of expecting them to be tight. And I brought up the note earlier, and I brought up all the reasons why you can expect Michigan and Cincinnati and Oklahoma State to be tight, but I almost wonder if it works kind of works in the other way, that everybody kind of expects it and they just come out and play. Sometimes you're too young and dumb. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know, and you just go out there and play and have fun and things work out. But yeah, I mean, Iowa's here and great for them for getting here, but it took a pretty amazing set of circumstances for them to
for them
to be in this game. And again, that game is why you're Nebraska. That was the vintage Nebraska loss. Like you could see it coming, like you saw it starting. And then like once you had the play in the end zone, there was zero doubt the way that game was going to go. Once that happened, that was like, okay, here we go again. And Nebraska continues to invent ways to lose games, but I don't know, man. I was super, super impressed with Michigan last week, and if they play with anywhere close to the intensity and the emotion that they played in that game last week, they'll handle Iowa pretty easily.
All right. Good. So we agree on a couple. We disagree.
Yep.
8 o'clock ABC, Pitt, Wake Forest, ACC title on the line, Bank of America Stadium, Charlotte, North Carolina, primetime window. Looks like it's going to be good weather. This is another one. I you mentioned Mike McDonald, Roy's winner. I think Warren Ruggiero, the Wake Forest offense coordinator, deserves consideration, and he's up there.
He is there.
But it's just amazing to me to watch this offense and how it does. And on one side, you got the I think Cole Kublik, our guy, called it the Wake Forest offense, where the quarterback keeps the ball in the stomach of the running back. He called it the walk the dog mesh, which I thought was hilarious. As you're walking the dog to the line of scrimmage, making a decision what you're going to do is pull it or throw the football. And on the other side, you got offensive coordinator Mark Whipple, who still demands his quarterback runs to the sideline and gets the plays for him. No hand signals. So we'll be
old school.
Yeah, we'll be getting it all in this
Spoon's game. Guy.
Plenty of points. 72.5, the over under, Pitt -3. I'm actually fired. Like, this is the night game. Like, I think it's going to be really exciting to watch, knowing that both these teams, like you said, with the Rose Bowl, both these teams got a big time bowl game to play for. And I lean Wake Forest with the points in this game.
You know, like it's a once in a, as long as Dabo is at Clemson type opportunity that you're never going to get a chance like this again to either play in the SEC championship game from the Atlantic, or if you're in the Coastal, when are you going to get an opportunity to play not Clemson? So like the opportunity is great. I don't like this game at all. I it's just two teams that, and anytime you got two offenses like this that are going to put up a play, I have no, Pitt does have the better defense. I'm completely staying away. I ain't got much here on it. I'm sorry.
Understood.
I don't want to force and talk into a word salad and make crap up that I have no idea really what I'm saying, but just you have a strong conviction here. I'll just let you carry the thing.
I'm to watch and enjoy for me. If I have to take the game in office pools or whatever, I'm taking the points with the underdog. And lastly, USC at Cal. Berserkly will be going crazy. 11 Eastern, FS1, the one for fun. Do they still call
it? Will they be going crazy? Are they going to be allowed to go to the games?
The only thing worse is if this game was played in Palo Alto, maybe, as far as fans. I don't see anybody going to this game. Cal, not impressive against UCLA.
No, they were not. Couldn't definite letdown after that big win.
Yeah. Shout out to that UCLA coaching staff for getting their team up after that USC win. Did. That was they big.
Did. That was maybe extend some different stuff offensively as well. 8-4 with a chance to win a ninth game in a bowl game. That was a
huge.
Yeah, but week after hanging 62 on SC, hell of a job by them.
I think it was 66, wasn't it?
Yeah,
better get your facts right when you're talking about the Bruins on this podcast.
I'll hear about it.
But they must be sky high out recruiting.
But it was 62-33. Maybe I'm wrong.
All right,
could be wrong. Whatever.
I'm sure we'll hear from people. You know, in West.
The first number was a 6. I know that.
Correct. 60 burger.
What about that heart shown by SC last week? Come battling back from a double-digit deficit. And like seriously, I was like, okay, here we go again. And then somehow they like came back.
And that's why I would take USC in this game. Like, at least they're still playing. Like, you don't see that.
I did not expect that.
And hey, they're auditioning for jobs for next year.
Correct. That's the thing. The head coach is in place, and he will certainly be looking to see who's invested and who's not.
All right. Eileen Jackson Dart in that game, even though this might be the first time ever in the history of the podcast I've picked against Justin Wilcox and Cal. speaking of SC, the hires are going fast and furious. I'll ask you this. What surprised you?
What surprised me?
Coaching.
The Virginia Tech hire surprised me.
Okay.
that surprised. Look, I get that the goal is not to win the press conference, but, and again, maybe Hugh Freeze and Jamie Chadwell were not candidates for the job, but that hire did surprise me. Maybe it'll turn out to be great. I hope it does, because Brent Pry's defenses at Penn State have been pretty good, and I think that's obviously what the Virginia Tech program was built up on, that lunch pail Beamer ball mentality, and I think they're hoping that Pry can be a little bit of a change getting back to that after Fuente and the offensive mindedness of him. So, but that hire did surprise me. Brian Kelly going did not surprise me. I think he was going somewhere. Mm-hmm. It kind of had been like the worst kept secret, I think, for weeks. People, mm-hmm. I think, expected that he was going to go somewhere, whether it was going to be SC, which I think was probably his first choice, which is why when he didn't get that, then he became the candidate at LSU. Mm-hmm. So it did not surprise me that Brian Kelly moved on. It did surprise me a little bit that Lincoln Riley did. But I think if you look at it, depending on what you want to believe, you got Oklahoma going to the SEC.
Yeah.
He could have had the LSU job, which is an SEC job, if you believe that. And I think there are people out there that think he kind of played LSU a little bit to kind of mm-hmm. leverage the situation. And USC jumped in and got him. So, I think this could have been a guy that didn't want any part of the SEC. I thought the next stop for Lincoln Riley would have been in the NFL. But surprised me a little bit that he wound up going to SC. Napier to Florida did not surprise, but that seemed like it was a pretty darn good fit. What else am I missing? Anything?
Well, our Zips, it's not official, but they could be getting
Moorhead.
home run higher.
Absolutely.
Home run.
Yeah, that's a rough job. Terry Bowden did a good job there early on.
Great job
from the depths and getting them to a bowl game, and then the bottom completely fell out. So hopefully Coach Moorhead can go there and get them back to respectability.
Here's what surprised me. I can't believe how Notre Dame and Oklahoma fans feel how highly of themselves. And what I mean is, like, you're not the, they left.
Yeah.
They left.
Yep.
You know, like,
yep.
Say sorry.
They left. They left for more money and what they thought was a better opportunity.
Yeah. Okay. Oklahoma's not going to be the best job in the SEC. It's not.
Correct.
SC, probably the best job in the Pac-12. Right?
Correct.
And here's another thing I will say. I love Bob Stoops. I think he's awesome.
Oh, he's great.
He's a rock star and always has been. But he still has his office in the football office at Norman. And if I'm the head coach and the other guy still has his office, like, I don't know. That would 5 years, it kind of get old mm-hmm. to me. That would kind of get old on me.
That was kind of like, didn't Bo have an office in Ann Arbor?
Yeah.
In the football building for forever.
And I'm sure when Coach K leaves that he's going to keep his office in Duke, and John Shire is going to have to deal with that. And you know what? And I thought Swarbrick was great because he said it's been 12 years and stuff happens.
Yep.
And you know, he had, what do you say? The Fruitian slips. Like, 12 years is a long, long, long time. Long time. And you know what? People need some change once in a while. So
yep.
Relax, have confidence in your people that are making decisions. I'm fully confident Notre Dame, you know, Joe Castiglione at Oklahoma and Jack.
Oh, Joe's got a list, man. They all have a list.
They all have a list. You ask any athletic director,
you would hope
they have one in their back
pocket. Good ones do.
He's just going to have a tough time bringing Bob back in from recruiting on the plane, I think, because Coach Stoops is having a blast, I feel like, the last couple of days selling the University of Oklahoma. But that's what I said. Just relax. Like, sometimes there's better things out there. Don't think so highly of yourself. That's what it comes down correct. To for me.
Yes, exactly. I'm glad you said it, because I was actually thinking of the hires in terms of surprising. But yes, the fact that, like, these people are like shocked and up in arms. How dare they leave? It happens.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're Notre Dame,
yep.
How do you play? Or I should say this. If you're Luke Fickell,
yep.
who I would imagine is going to be the first phone call that Notre Dame makes,
mm-hmm.
like, how does this go down? Because, like, does Notre Dame just kind of sit and wait and be like, hey, we're going to hire Luke, but we're just going to sit and wait for 3 weeks? until the college football playoff? Or do you talk to Luke and say, how do you want to deal with it? Because like, if it comes out that if they all make him the offer, or does Notre Dame say, hey, no, you have to come now? You can wind up with two playoff teams without a coach.
Yeah.
If Notre Dame happens to get in.
Well, yeah, no doubt. Here's what I say. And I had some fun yesterday when I tweeted out, could Cincinnati lose this week and fickle coach Notre Dame in the playoff? Obviously, I was just trying to have some fun. I think if you're Notre Dame, you say,
I think we'd have coach Notre Dame in the playoff.
That would be awesome. I think you say, Luke, the job is yours. If you're in, obviously Sunday, we're going to know if Cincinnati's in the playoff. Cincinnati's in the playoff. You go coach the playoff for Cincinnati and do your double recruiting or do whatever you got to do. I'll never forget. It was 2000. It was the Florida Oklahoma national championship at the Orange.
2008 season.
Tebow versus Sam Bradford. And I got there. It was one of my first on field gigs. And I got to the field. I was there like 3 hours before kickoff. And it was just after.
That was when Fox had the game.
Yep. And Dan Mullen had accepted a job, I believe, at Mississippi State.
Yep.
And he sat on the bench in the Rose Bowl and was on the phone for a good hour and a half talking. Like, he knew he had the job. And he took care of, calling recruits. Like, it works pretty good if you could call recruits and say, where are you? I'm on the sidelines about to coach in the national title game. It can be done. These guys are tireless workers. They know what they need to do to succeed. And I think the timing of it all sucks because of the recruiting and that new early signing period. That's where it really gets confusing. And I think that's where these guys – the most important thing is hiring the right guys in that facet, because that's what you need to get settled as soon as possible. But I totally think Luke Fickell could handle the job. I do find it fascinating that people outside the Notre Dame tree don't have any problem with going and hiring a Cincinnati head coach again, but the Notre Dame fans feel butthurt and don't want another Cincinnati head coach, just because their coach, that guy just left and gave you 12 years and he's all the time wins leader. So I find it funny that would be an issue, but I do think about Freeman. I have never heard one bad word about him. No. I just don't know if Notre Dame, do you just ride the lightning knowing what they've done recruiting, keeping that staff intact? I think really highly of Tommy Reese. I don't know what's in store for him, but do you ride the lightning and keep those coordinators, make Marks the head coach? Like, I don't know. I don't know how that works, but I would think Fickell would be the first call.
Yeah, I would think so too. And Matt Campbell, I would guess, would probably be the second, if indeed you're not going to hire.
Yeah.
And look, Notre Dame does not usually hire guys who have not been head coaches. I mean, what the last was Bob David. Bob David, they hired that, and that was very mixed.
Mm-hmm.
So
I just think about Bob Davey. If any other Notre Dame coach was the coach of Notre Dame against Oregon State that night in the Fiesta Bowl, they weren't going to win that one either.
No, it didn't matter.
All right, let's get to the Big Mike Happy Recap.
Big Mike Happy Recap.
All right, officially, I'm going to go. I'm definitely taking Louisiana plus the 3. I'm taking Iowa plus the 10.5. I will take the Roadrunners plus 2. For anything more, check the column.
You're getting 2.5, by the way, bro.
2.5 Roadrunners?
2.5.
Oh, we'll buy that to 3 for sure. Yeah, so buy UTSA plus 3. Iowa plus the 10.5. Louisiana plus the 3. Possibly could be looking at USC plus the 4 and Oregon plus the 3 and Baylor plus the 5.5. So, you know what?
What?
Over in the Cincinnati Houston game. That's in
for me. Over 53.5 for you.
That's me. You, sir.
Roadrunners plus 2.5. Cajuns plus 3 and a few spots, so we didn't even have to buy it there. So we can get it. We can get a true 3. Bearcats minus 10.5. Michigan minus 10.5. Iowa team total under. and Utah State plus six.
All right. Very good. Good luck to all you. We will probably take next week off and get you set for Schwenk. What do we say? We'll tape bowl preview on the 15th.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, it better be the 15th because the 16th, I'm going to be gone.
Yeah, you are. Yes, you are. All right. So
now we could probably do another, we do like an early bowls and kind of a general whatever potpourri conversation. And then maybe the following week or like the 29th or something, we can kind of circle back and focus in on.
We could get something done.
Some other games.
Very good. Obviously, the biggest thing with bowls is going to be these opt-outs because it's going to be few and far between, I feel.
Right. And I think that's probably the way for us to go. I'm having an on-air conversation about our workflow, but I think people are interested. I think the best thing for like our column on ESPN.com, I kind of think it's a thing where we just kind of update it daily as we go along and just fire it into Behrman, and just Behrman as a buddy of mine said, you'll get what you get when you get it. And I think that's what Behrman's going to have to deal with. You'll get what you get when you get it. If we got to play on a game, the morning of a game, we'll send it in. And you post it. Do your job, just like Bill Belichick at the Patriots.
There we go. Speaking of my NFL lock of the year, Buffalo Monday night.
I have a Bills division bet, so I'm hoping for that. That would be very
Patriots cannot keep covering at this clip.
That would be very well. You know what's so funny about how like what a crappy college football season I'm having, like. I'm in one of these super contest type deals. Like I'm 38-22 in the NFL, which is like the sport that I don't even follow. So it's like I'm having a terrible college football year, and then I'm like right in the mix of this football, the NFL pool. So it's just bizarre how when things are down, a little silver lining in what's been a down year for college football.
Very good.
You brought up the NFL, so that's why I just...
I know. I just couldn't help myself. No, we're not doing an NFL weekly podcast.
No, we're not.
It until Sundays unless something
happens. No, exactly. When I have to make my picks on Saturday, that's what I do. What do we got this week? We got a lot of road favorites, it looks like, don't we? Yeah.
All right.
Road chalk.
All right. As you look at that, go Jets. Take us away.
Had the Jets last week. That was a lock last week. Absolute lock that they were going to win that game. We'll see what happens. Maybe get Gardner Minshew this week, right, for the Eagles?
Yeah.
That's a massive stay-away game. Yuck. Probably find myself on the Cowboys, though. We'll see. Less you bet, more you lose when you win.
You can listen or follow the Stanford Steve and the Bear podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. Plus, don't miss more from Stanford Steve on ESPN SportsCenter with Scott Van Pelt. And check out the Bear on College Game Day on ESPN.